auspicious and wonderful day of Govardhana Puja, we will read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhana Hill. And we'll read through the chapter and touch on different points as we go. Beginning with text 1, Sri Shuka Uvacha, Bhagavan Apitatraiva, Baladevena Samyuta, Apasyan Nivasan Gopa, Indra Yaga Kritodhyama. Shukadeva Goswami said, while staying in that very place with his brother Baladeva, Lord Krishna happened to see the cowherd men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. In that very place means near where the Brahmins were performing sacrifice. That was the previous pastime described in the previous chapter of the 10th canto. How Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were feeling hungry and all the cowherd boys, so they approached some sacrificial Brahmins and requested food. The Brahmins refused. But then the Brahmins' wives came and they were willing and happy to supply lots and lots of food for Krishna Balaram and their cowherd boyfriends. So at that place where Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys had met with the wives of the Brahmins, so at that same place, Lord Krishna saw that his father Nanda Maharaj and Nanda Maharaj's associates were preparing also for some big yajna. Being the omniscient supersoul, the Supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation, yet he still humbly inquired from the elders, headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj. Are they there on time, sir? Lord Krishna said, my dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. What is it meant to accomplish? If this is a ritual sacrifice, then for whose satisfaction is it intended? And by what means is it going to be executed? Please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know and am ready to hear in good faith. Certainly, no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. When people in this world perform activities, sometimes they understand what they're doing, and sometimes they don't. Those who know what they're doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. Krishna's emphasizing the importance of knowledge. Such being the case, this ritualistic endeavor of yours should be clearly explained to me. Is it a ceremony based on spiritual injunction or simply a custom of ordinary society? So then Nanda Maharaj explains that this is going to be a big sacrifice for Indra, because we are cowherding people. And therefore we are dependent on rain so that the cows can get plenty of grass and plenty of nourishment. And then if the cows do get nice nourishment, then they produce lots of nice milk. And we get that milk, some of it we convert into different dairy products, and then, of course, some of that we use ourselves as foodstuffs, but there's excess, there's so much. So we trade the excess along with the excess milk as such with other farmers who produce other types of products, vegetables, fruit, and so on like that, and grains. And in this way, we maintain ourselves. So it's our livelihood is dependent on rain. Therefore, we do the Indra Puja, Indra Yagya, every year to get his mercy, because he is the Lord of the rains. So this is what we do. And in this way, we live very nicely. So that Indra Puja was not really a fire sacrifice. It was an offering of food in some sacrificial way. Lots and lots of food was offered to Lord Indra. That was the process. Whereas the Brahmins had been performing sacrifice just immediately before, they were doing some sort of fire sacrifice, and actually they were doing some animal sacrifice in the course of that whole process. But the Indra Puja was different. So Nanda Maharaj goes on explaining that what is this process, and is it based on scripture or is it based on some custom of ordinary society? He says a few verses later, this religious principle is based on sound tradition. The Sanskrit word used in the verse is paramparya, through parampara. But it is a different sort of parampara to what we are familiar with in Krishna consciousness. It's some sort of material tradition. And in the Krishna book, when Srila Prabhupada describes this part of the discussion, Prabhupada makes the point that it was really just more or less just a family tradition, that their family had been doing for many generations. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Keshava heard the statements of his father Nanda and other senior residents of Raja, he addressed his father as follows, to arouse anger in Lord Indra. Lord Krishna said, it is by the force of karma that a living entity takes birth, and it is by karma alone that he meets his destiny. His happiness, distress, fear, and sense of security all arise as the effects of karma. Even if there is some supreme controller who rewards all others the results of their activities, he must also depend on the performers engaging in activity. After all, there's no question of being the bestower of fruit of results unless fruit of activities have actually been performed. So we start to get the idea here what Lord Krishna is presenting going to present to Nanda Maharaj that why bother worshipping Lord Indra, or even for that matter as described here, want to speak of Lord Indra, even if there's some supreme controller, even beyond Lord Indra. This whole idea of there being controllers who are supplying different requirements to people who deserve them and not to people who don't deserve them. This whole process makes the demigods like Indra and whoever else is in this category of controllers, higher controllers, it makes them dependent upon karma, upon the activities of the people who they are going to reward and reciprocate with. Yes, on a certain level, of course, there are elements of truth in that we get whatever we deserve. And particularly people on the material platform, they definitely get what they deserve, and they don't get what they don't deserve. So in that sense, the demigods as such, one of their main businesses, very important business of theirs, is to see that people get what they deserve. So in that sense, well, there's truth in it. There's truth in it. At least in regards to people on the material platform and their material activities and how the demigods respond to their material activities. Although Krishna's point goes beyond just the demigods to even acknowledging some supreme controller. So of course there's some truth in it, obviously. But he's also taking it further than is really correct. And Krishna has a particular idea in mind in doing that. Let's just read another couple of verses. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of their own nature, why should people worship him? Every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. This entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living entities. Because it is karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low grade material bodies, this karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling Lord. Therefore, devotees, listen, Krishna is speaking. Therefore, one should seriously worship work itself. You should do your prescribed duties, authorized activities. If you do your authorized activities nicely, you will get good karma. And then, in this case, Indra will be forced to give you what you need. You don't need to worship him. Just do your karma on the basis of which you will be due to get rain. So if you're going to worship anything, don't worship Indra. Worship your work. Because that is the cause of you getting everything in life. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his own nature and should perform his own duty. Indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worshipable deity. So this philosophy that Krishna is presenting here is called Karma Mimamsa. Karma Mimamsa, which basically means, as we've been describing the last few minutes, that the main thing is your karma. Get your karma in order. And when you get your karma in order, everything will come. And life will go on, you'll be successful. Karma Mimamsa. And as we said, there is some truth in it. Some truth. Not too much, but there's some truth. You might ask, why does Krishna not say? Because Krishna, the reason Krishna is talking like this is because Krishna is feeling anxious. He's feeling concerned. These are my devotees. And not only just devotees in the broad sense, but these are my topmost devotees. These are the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the Brijbasis, the greatest of all devotees. Their only goal in life is me. And they live their lives just completely focused on me and depending on me in every aspect of their lives. But now they're thinking that we don't need to worry about Krishna so much. Let us worship the demigod. So Krishna is concerned about that they're becoming deviated from pure devotional service and getting into a materialistic approach of demigod worship. So how to correct that? How to correct that? In one sense, you could say that it could be argued that Krishna could simply go up to them and say, Listen, Brijvasis, I know you think I am just a little village boy, one of the little boys living here, and, you know, maybe a more attractive boy than the other boys, but still, just one of the boys. And therefore, I don't need to be taken very seriously. Just as a little child, Krishna is 7 years old here. But, Brijbasis, I have news for you. I am God. Everything is coming from me. Indra is just my servant. And he's doing all these things, supplying rain and whatever, on my order, as a service to me. So ultimately it's me behind the scenes who's the supreme controller of all these things, how everything's working. So therefore, don't do the Indra Puja. Worship me. This is the fact, actually. This is the fact. And this is what Krishna indeed presents in Bhagavad Gita very clearly, that people may do different types of sacrifice, worship different types of deities, but all these things are being done in a wrong way. They should be done for me. They should be done for me. So Krishna could have said to them, listen, devotees, let's sit down and have a quick Bhagavad Gita seminar overview. And then you become good devotees, chant 16 rounds a day, put pictures or deities of me on your altars at home, because the British Nazis, at home, they have their own altars. They worship Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan, in that formal sense of offering arati and ceremonial activities. So Krishna could have said, just replace Lakshmi Narayan with me, and there we go. But if Krishna had done that, then the most special part of his whole life would have been completely undermined. And the most wonderful thing which he himself lives for would have been lost. And that is the intimate, loving relationships that he has with the Brijavasis. Simply on the basis of love, that they love him because he's so lovable, and he loves them in return, and that exchange of love is, that's everything. That's everything for Krishna. And really, Krishna couldn't care less. Well, maybe not couldn't care less, but he certainly doesn't care so much about if they offer him arati in certain ways and chants, do things according to certain procedures, very formally. We find verses and statements that to the effect that Krishna prefers the chastisements of the gopis, or sometimes of Jatila, because sometimes they chastise him in the course of their intimate loving pastimes. He prefers those chastisements to the very respectful prayers of the scholars of Vedic literature and ritualistic Brahmins and people like that. He'd rather have Jatila wagging her finger at him and speaking some apparently harsh words, telling him he's a rascal, as opposed to these readings from Vedic literature about how he's the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Controller, etc. So it's a very important point, extremely important point. Krishna, his mission right now in this situation is somehow to stop them doing this Indra Puja, stop them thinking that we need to worship Indra in order to live properly. We have to worship Indra. Stop them from that and get them to worship him somehow, without them really getting this idea that he is the Supreme Lord and should, on an ongoing basis, be related to in that sense. So that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And, well, we'll explain later how, in more detail, how one time Upananda, one of Nanda Maharaj's brothers, got the realization that Krishna is God somehow. And he called a meeting of all the Brijavasis. Listen, sit down. I have some very important information for you. That you all think that Krishna is just a little village boy? Have I got news for you? Oh, actually, he is the supreme Lord. He is the supreme truth. He is the supreme powerful. So, Mother Yashoda, you stop chastising him and waving a stick at him. Stop tying him up with rope. And Nandaraj, you stop wagging your finger at him and chastising him because he's a great personality. We'll talk about it more a little later on. But basically, Nanda Maharaj interrupts and says, wait a minute. What are you saying? What are you talking about? Don't you know this Krishna, supreme truth? How can you say that? I know him better than you. He's not the supreme truth. He's a liar. He's a big liar. He steals the butter and we confront him. And we say, you stole the butter? And he says, no, not me. How could you say that? He's just a liar. He's not the supreme truth. And it goes on. We will talk about it later. So Krishna wanted, he had to protect that, the intimacy of the loving relationships, but still get them to reject the Indra Puja and get them to somehow sort of worship him, but without it being so absolutely clear. This is the essence of what's going on right now. So he goes on talking like this, and he says, well, he said that our lives are dependent on our work, so we should worship our work. And what is our work? It's the cows. The cows are our work. They're our lives. So we should worship the cows, which we will do in a little while. And the cows are dependent on Govardhan Hill because they go there every day to eat the lush green grass. And as a result, they produce this beautiful milk, and then we live. So let us do a great puja for Govardhan Hill and the cows and the Brahmins, because the Brahmins direct us how to live, how to do our work. This is the essence of what Krishna is saying here. That we worship the cows because we depend on the cows, but the cows depend on Govardhan Hill. So, main thing, worship Govardhan Hill and the cows, but particularly Govardhan Hill, because the cows depend on Govardhan Hill. So let us do a great Govardhan Puja. Let us do a great Govardhan Puja. And everyone agreed. Let us prepare all sorts of wonderful foodstuffs and offer them to Govardhan Hill and offer them to the Brahmins and then feed everyone and do this. This is my idea, O Father, and you may carry it out if it appeals to you. Such a sacrifice will be very dear to the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill, and also to me. Just in introducing a little bit on the side. The thing, of course, is that Govardhan Hill is a form of Krishna. It's a form of Krishna. And as the pastime unfolds step by step, Krishna manifests a gigantic form on top of Govardhan Hill. And he and all the Vrijvasis are down at the bottom of the hill. And then they see this gigantic form on top of the hill, sort of hovering, touching the hill. And somehow or other, it doesn't explain precisely how it works, but somehow or other, the Vrijvasis understood that this gigantic form is Govardhan Hill. Special manifestation of Govardhan Hill. Plus, this gigantic form is Krishna too. It's both. And in that way, they understood the identity of Govardhan Hill and Krishna. But it was all a bit subtle, because Krishna himself was standing with them at the bottom of the hill. So they all offered their obeisances to that gigantic form. And Krishna offered his obeisances also. Krishna's offering respects to himself. But at the same time, the Vrijvasis can see this is Govardhan and this is Krishna, but it's a little subtle. It's not as completely sort of such an open declaration of Krishna's position as when Mother Yashoda looked in his mouth and saw the whole universe there, including herself and including Krishna. And then she thought, oh look, the whole universe is within Krishna. He must be God. That was a more sort of clear realization that she got. Not completely. Krishna took it away after a little bit of time. But here in this case, it's more subtle. It's more subtle. Govardhan Hill, the gigantic form is Govardhan Hill, is Krishna, but Krishna's here worshipping Govardhan Hill and that gigantic form. So they took all the ingredients, all the different foodstuffs they were going to offer to Lord Indra, and they offered them to Govardhan Hill. We don't have the time right now to go through all the details, but it was very major food offering. Any type of prasadam, or at that point it was bhoga, any type of foodstuff which you like was there. Every type of foodstuff you can imagine was there. And many types of foodstuffs that you cannot imagine were there. Oh yes, thousands of food preparations. Thousands. Very incredible. And all offered to Govardhan Hill. And of course it's a bit of a long story, we'll go through it more in detail a little later. But basically, Govardhan Hill was satisfied, the Govardhan Puja was successful, and the Vrijvasis felt very happy that we did the Govardhan Puja, very good, and it all worked out. We don't need to worry about Indra Puja. So they were very happy. Everyone was extremely happy, except one person. That person who was not happy, in fact, who was just completely disturbed, totally, to the point that he just lost control of himself. That was Lord Indra. They're ready? Well, they can start. So that was Lord Indra. And he became so disturbed that he thought, who do these people think they are? They will not worship me. But rather they follow the instructions of this little boy, Krishna. And who does he think he is? This is too much. So he decided the only appropriate thing to do was to destroy the bridge vessels. They will not worship me. They must die. And of course, we're all prone to pride to some degree. And sometimes if someone else gets some attention, but we don't, but we feel that we deserve some attention as much as that other person. Sometimes we become a little envious of that person. It happens sometimes. We become a little angry. But generally we do not become so angry if that happens, to the point that we think these people must be killed. You know, my Sankirtan score was the top, but they didn't read it out. But rather they read out someone else's score as if it was top. But actually I did a lot more. Oh, they had to die. Not usually, even though we may get disturbed. So what happens after this? What happens? Oh, it is very amazing. Tune in at 11 o'clock. Is it 11 o'clock? Anyway, whenever it is, tune in at 11 o'clock or so and find out what happens next. It's really, things just go into another dimension altogether. Hare Krishna.
Jai.